So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast. And good morning, everybody. It's Dan Latto speaking. Hope you're well today. So welcome to the Property Cash Flow Show. In today's session, I don't know what day it is again. It's Wednesday, 2nd of February. Today's session, we're going to talk to you about 5 steps to financial freedom through property. Obviously, we've been in property quite a long time. We've been in property for 23 years, being financially free for... Well, we got financially free twice, actually. So the first time, I started investing at age 26. We got through to age 30, and then I became financially free. But that first time I became financially free, I didn't have any kids. And so as soon as you start having kids, financial freedom takes on a whole new meaning because you need quite a lot more money. But the original plan from age 26 onwards was to just earn 1,500 quid a month. Obviously, that's 23 years ago, and you need rather a bit more money than just 1,500 quid a month these days. But back then, it was fine, and that was the plan. So it was get to £1,500, I can leave work, never have to work again, blah, blah, blah. And it took us 4 years to get there from age 26 to age 30. We did that as well by increasing our income. So we got a job from 15 grand. We got it up to £100,000 in 4 years flat. We've actually done a podcast on that, one of the really early ones. That's a whole new story about a whole other story about how to actually do that. Pretty impressive, I actually think. Still to this day, I think that's quite impressive. I'm not sure I could do it again. Far too lazy these days. But for me, it worked. We went from 26 to age 30, generating £100,000 a year. A lot of that money went into property, generated £150 per month per property. You get to 10 properties, there's your 1,500 quid. It's fairly obvious that that's all you needed to do back then. I couldn't get my head round why more people weren't doing it. And when I spoke to people, they'd go, oh, property investing's risky, and it's, oh, you don't want to do that, and all this bad stuff, okay? But it was from people who'd not actually done it. And then when I spoke to the few people that I found that had actually done it, obviously they kind of lied a little bit as well and told me how amazing it is. And don't get me wrong, the financial freedom aspect is amazing. Managing tenants, not so much. But financial freedom came quite early for me, age 30. And then, you know, bought a Porsche 911, went backpacking for a month, and then came back and half the portfolio was empty. And I remember speaking to the lettings agency in Leeds going, what's going on? Oh, market's quiet. And I'm like, this is bullshit. So at that point, we started our own lettings agency and built that business up before we sold it 10 years ago. So we've been in property for quite some time. And in today's session, I'm going to cover some of the things that I've learned over the last 23 years of being a property investor. And we've done all sorts, by the way. We've done all sorts of crazy stuff to try and make money. Literally, we have done everything. I mean, I've packed computers. I've been a cleaner. I've literally cleaned toilets in apartments because we were getting ripped off by our cleaners back then. A deep clean as opposed to a clean. I'm like, what's the difference between a deep clean and a normal clean? Do you just like push harder when you're wiping that surface? I never quite understood that. And it took two people, I don't know, 6 hours to clean a two bed flat. And I'm like, it doesn't take that long. And I went and did it in like 5 hours. And we had a full system on how to clean the property. It wasn't that difficult. So we've literally done everything. And so that's some of the stuff that we're going to share with you in today's session. If you've got any questions, just stick them in the box, of course. And if you're listening to this on the podcast on iTunes, and thank you very much for listening and downloading all our podcasts. We're going live in Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, and a couple of Facebook groups as well. So thank you very much for watching. Let's talk on the first one then. Let's talk about budget. Now, budget covers a couple of different aspects here. So if you're wanting to get to financial freedom through property, there's two types of budget that you need to understand. The first type of budget is your own internal budget. And what I mean by this is, I'm sorry to tell you folks, it's a spreadsheet. It is a goddamn boring spreadsheet. But your spreadsheet, and we rattle on about this almost every podcast, should detail all of your outgoings. And people go, I don't need that, Dan. It's all up here in my head. And literally, when we get them to sit down and go through it, they realise it's not all in the head. Their fantasy world is in their head, but the reality is on the spreadsheet, and they're two different things entirely. So if you've not done that yet, you should really have a budget. You know, I've got a budget. I'll just pull mine up. I've got a budget on everything. So where are we? Cash flow. Here we go. Like everything. I've got a budget for how much Ethereum am I buying this month? What's my petrol? What about clothes? A CrossFit's on there. I'm not going. I should be going. I'm not going. My healthcare is on there. My personal expenses. My TV licenses. I've got more TV licenses than I want, quite frankly. But that's because I'm a HMO investor as well as just a single family let investor. All my mortgages are on there. Service charges. My HMRC actually has a line item. Property repairs, a big line item. Ground rents, which come through every January, more or less, is a line item on there, so that by the time I get to January, I'm not having to find several thousand pounds to pay for all these ground rents that we've got. We allocate a set amount every single month. And so this is your internal budget that you absolutely must have in order to make it all work. Now, the second type of budget is the budget on the actual property itself. And so, you know, these are two separate things and they're dealt with very differently. So I've got another spreadsheet, for example, and on that spreadsheet, it's got several different sheets. But one of the sheets, for example, is a single family let. So let's say it's £100,000. It'll tell me what deposit is. It'll tell me what the stamp duty is, calculates it all. It'll tell me what the mortgage is per month, interest only. I have to put in the percentage amount, so I need to know, you know, what the mortgage amounts are. But this is where I'm actually calculating whether it's a good deal or not. Now, what makes a good deal isn't necessarily what's just on paper. So I saw a guy posting a couple of days ago, and I thought it was a really good piece of advice. It was an end terrace, and it was double yellow lines, and there was no access for a skip. And although on paper it looked really good, in reality, it would have been an absolute ball ache trying to get that property refurbed. There's nowhere to put your skip. There's no access for trucks and workmen. There's no parking and so on. So on paper, it looked good, but on reality, it didn't. So the budget has to look good, not just on paper, but from a practical point of view of doing a refurb. Now, like I say, we've got several different types of property deals that we might buy. This was a single family unit. We might have multi-lets, like a HMO, houses of multiple occupation, you know, shared housing. So you might have a 120 grand, you might have a 10K refurb, you might have five rooms at £350 each, and it'll just spew out, is it a good deal or not? Obviously, there's all this extra due diligence that has to go on as well. But you need to understand what your budgets are. And if you don't understand this, you're going to get bitten. I mean, when I ran my numbers, you know, what am I now? I'm 49, so 23 years ago, 26. And actually, for the first 6 years before I actually bought a property, I'd bought hundreds in my imagination, right? And what I mean by that is I'd gone through this budget. I'd worked for numbers. I could go to a property on Rightmove and I can instantly just look at the property and I would know what the numbers are because I've done hundreds, thousands of calculations based on, you know, what's the rental return, what's the cost of acquisition, what's the return on investment, what's the yield. All that stuff has to be calculated. Now, if you don't know how to do that, I don't think you should be buying anything. Like, if you don't know how to instantly look at a property and go, yep or no, I don't think you've done enough calculations yet. And I know that's kind of putting some people off, but you need to do the calculation. This is the bit that people kind of forget. Now, property is obviously really forgiving. You can make a massive, massive mistake and 10, 20 years on, it'll rectify itself. Okay. I overpaid once for a property. It's the only time I overpaid, and it was because I was moving in. It was a very nice penthouse, two bedrooms, three roof terraces. I mean, you know, we had 1,000 square feet just on roof terraces, by the way, two car parking spaces in Leeds City Centre. I really, really overpaid, paid £250,000 for it. Even today, we've owned that property 15 years. Even today, you'd be lucky to get £210,000 for it. But so what? We just hang on another 10 years and the price will rectify itself. And in the meantime, we've been fortunate enough to have low interest rates. And sure, look, obviously carries, you know, part of the way forward. But whilst we've had low interest rates, we've been paying down the mortgages on quite a few of our properties, in fact, including this one. So the difference between what it's worth and what we owe is actually increasing. That's the only time we ever actually overpaid for a property. Everything else has been below market value. But you've got to work this into your budgets. And if you don't know at a glance that a property is a good deal or a bad deal, you've simply not done the calculations enough time. Do the calculations a million times. Like obviously not quite literally, but as close as to that as you can actually get. Most people have done a calculation 10 times.
and it's not enough. They go on Right Move and maybe have a piece of paper and try and work it out. And I've done that too, by the way, but I've also done it on a spreadsheet. And do both. You should know how to work a calculation out without having to use a spreadsheet. Just grab yourself a sheet of paper, work it out. What's your return on investment? What's your yield? Practice, practice, practice. Okay, next step on your one of your five steps to financial freedom through property is to learn how to negotiate. Negotiation is an absolute must in business. There's just simply no question about it. And we negotiate on everything. I mean, we negotiate in life. As a kid, can I have a biscuit? Can I have some sweets? No. If I tidy my bedroom up, can I have some sweets? That's negotiating right there. I don't know. We're just a negotiation species. It's what we do. I'll give you a really good example of a negotiation that I did. We had a property that we were putting an offer in. Two-bed flat in Leeds City Centre through one of the big estate agencies there. And I'd actually bought quite a few properties through this estate agency already. So they knew who I was, this cocky, Porsche-driving wanker. He thought he knew it all. And I thought I did back then, you know. It's only when you get older, you're like, oh, you don't really know anything, do you? So anyway, we went in and we saw this property. It had been on the market for 2 years. It hadn't been rented. It was filthy. It was dusty. It was just, you know, no balcony, two bed with parking, Leeds City Centre. You need parking, really, if you've got a two bed. That's what I used to think. Anyway, we went in. It was on at 175 and we put an offer in of 139 or 140, I think. Something. I think we put it in at 140. And the guy behind the desk said, well, I put it in, Dan, but to be honest with you, I think you're taking a piss. Literally, that's what he said. This was an estate agent. I'm like, that's okay. Look, you're an estate agent. You have to legally, you know, you're legally obliged to put in all offers to the vendor. Let's just stick it in and see what happens. So they came, they put it in, they came back and said, no, it's been rejected, but you're quite close. So I put another offer in of 141,500. Bear in mind, this property was on at 175. We put an offer in at 141,500. It came back and went, Dan, I don't know how you've done it, but they've accepted it. And so we completed on that property. It had been empty for 2 years. We got what's called a key undertaking. So we exchanged contracts and then we got the cleaners in. And while we had the cleaners in, we got pictures on it and we put it on Rightmove. And then we actually rented it out. And so then we completed on it before the tenants moved in. And so we got the keys on the Friday and we're desperate to get the keys on the Friday. And I'm like, oh, can we, the estate agent let me go get them from the person selling it. So I got them from the person selling it. And the person said, you know, we really struggled on that property. He said, oh, I got tenants moving in tomorrow. And they were like aghast. How have you rented it? How have you done that so fast? And it was a good dig to have at the lettings estate agency. And it was just because they're shit, that's all. we know what we're doing and they don't. So that was quite enjoyable. But that's a really good example of negotiation, putting in offers. And you have to learn to negotiate. And so there's a thing called, see if I can remember what it's called, latitude of agreement. So, good example. Margaret Thatcher did this. She went, right, okay, we're going to close all the coal mines down. And obviously everybody kicked off. And she went, okay, maybe not all of them, maybe just 50%. And sure, everybody kicked off. But the other people in there were going, well, at least it's not all of them. And so that was a pullback position. Now, if Maggie Thatcher had decided to put in 50%, she'd have had to have had a pullback position to 20% left. Remaining sold. Anyway, so that's a latitude of agreement. So if you're putting in an offer, you know, you have to leave yourself room for a pullback, a fallback position. If you're putting in, you know, when people put in a best and final and you put in your best and final, I think you're going to lose. It depends on the context. But, you know, if you say, you know, like that deal was 175 grand. We bought it for 140. You know, we went to 141,500. If they'd have said that wasn't still enough, I would have gone to 142,500. So the first jump was 1,500. The next jump was 1,000. And the next jump would have been 500. And the next jump would have been 250. And the next jump would have been an extra 125. And so that's the latitude of agreement. You start at one place, knowing this is where you want to end up. This is where they are. And this is the bit that you're negotiating. You're not negotiating this bit. But having enough flow of property available to put offers in is really paramount. But you have to learn how to negotiate. And most people, you know, one of the things that absolutely petrified me about Brexit, for example, we've got David Davis going in to negotiate on behalf of the UK for Brexit. And I'm like, God, this guy can't negotiate what shoes he's putting on, let alone a trade deal. And now we've got Liz Truss going all over the place to negotiate a new deal. Like, this woman can't negotiate anything. And yet we've got her negotiating for the poor, the poverty-stricken, the middle class and the wealthy in the UK. And she can't negotiate Sainsbury's, for God's sake, or the car park. And yet we've got this person negotiating. It absolutely petrifies me. But they think because they're in government that they're an expert negotiator. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You should be paying people who are expert negotiators to come and do the negotiation for you. Now, as a property investor, I don't think you should be doing that. I think you should be going to learn this skill yourself. And the best way of going to learn the skill is you've got to read the books. You've got to go on the training courses. You've got to put offers in. Start practicing. Practice on everybody. Go to the petrol station. Ask for a discount at Sainsbury's. Oh, it's a pound. Can we do it for 90p? No. Okay. No problem. Thought I'd ask. It doesn't matter if you get the negotiation or not. It matters that you try. And also, understanding what it's like to be rejected when you're trying to put in these negotiations is really vital as well. Because then, if people say no, you don't get hurt as much. Trust me on this. The first time you put in an offer and it gets rejected, first of all, you won't even put the offer in because it's a cheeky offer. You won't even put it in. But you have to put it in. You have to learn how to get rejected and not feel so bad about it. It's like, you know, seeing a girl in the nightclub and going over and not saying anything. Not even going over. Just go over. This could change your life. This could be the love of your dreams. Oh, no. I'll do it. I'll do it another time. It's crazy. Why are you doing that? You want to get one life. Learn how to negotiate and you can win at life. Not just in property, but you can get this opportunity to get amazing discounts. You know that old adage of you make money when you buy, not when you sell. The value is when you're purchasing property. Selling it is just realizing the profit that you've made. But you actually make money when you buy, not when you sell. Okay, practice the numbers. So we've already spoken about the budget from a personal point of view. We've also spoken about the budget from actually buying. But how many times have you actually run those numbers? And most people have simply run the numbers once or twice. I've got a one bed flat. It's in Leeds. Let's have a look. Let's pull up Rightmove, and we'll show you. We'll do this. Let's show you the screen as well. Leeds. Let's have a look and see what there is for sale, and then let's share this screen. I do like doing this. Find properties, and let me share this screen for you so you can see it. Obviously, if you're not listening on the podcast. If you're listening on the podcast, you can't see this, but that's okay. Okay, so you should have my screen in front of you. Right here, we want to view it as lowest price. Let's have a look at the lowest price. And by the way, one of the things that's indicative of the market right now is how many properties are on the market that are going through auction. There's some amazing property prices here. City Space, Guy Price, 40 grand. City Space, by the way, we furnished half a City Space. We were the official furniture packages supplier when that first came online. Some of those units get really, really hot, like incredibly hot. So if it's south facing, I think it is, wherever the sun hits, you don't want to be buying those because they get really, really hot in summer and your tenants don't like it and they move out. So your tenants only last a year there. Like knowing stuff like this, you know, this is about you practicing. This is about you not just practicing the numbers, but going and doing viewings. Do viewings at night times. Do viewings when it's sunny. Work out, especially on a one bed flat. On a house, people like it when, you know, it's south facing gardens and it's sunny. But on a one bed flat where it's not even a one bed, it's a studio and you've got nowhere to go other than melt like a vampire in front of the sun. This is the stuff that you need to understand. It's not just about practicing numbers on a spreadsheet, because a spreadsheet isn't where we live. We live in the real world. And so, you know, we have stuff that pops up. Go and visit it. You know, check the traffic, check the noise. We got a property in Leeds, and at 6 a.m. Sunday morning, because it's next to a bar, all you hear at 6 a.m. is all the bottles being tipped into the bottle bank. Like, stuff like that, people don't realise. And I'm not saying that you camp out at 6 a.m, you know, between 4 a.m. and 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning, but maybe it is worth it. Because that can have that can have a transitional effect on what you're going to do. Anyway, there's quite a few here at City Space. look at all the guide prices here. We don't like buying at auctions, by the way. I'll tell you a story about buying at an auction. So a friend of mine from a long time ago, he went to an auction, was selling some properties, and he bumped into a mate of his that he'd not seen for quite some time. So they both sat there in the auction and said, "Oh, what are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, I'm selling some properties." I said, "Oh, I wish I'd have known. I would have bought them from you." He said, no, you don't understand. I sell them in an auction because we get more at an auction than we do selling them from an estate agent." And the guy's like, "How does that work?" He said, it depends where we are in the market cycle. If there's a lot of properties that are available and the market is low and there's not a lot of buyers, so it's oversupplied, then you're going to be able to get deals cheaper at an estate agent. But sometimes if the market is really, really busy and properties are flying through the door, depending where the auction is, if it's up north, for example, and you've got buyers down south, or if the auction's down south for a property up north, this can also have an effect. But this is for you to understand these market cycles. And the only way you understand market cycles is by running the numbers constantly. Anyway, that's auctions for you. Let's just look at all the guide prices here. Okay, we've got this, a studio apartment, 55 grand. I mean, that's a no-brainer right there. We'll have a look at that one in a minute. I mean, what are you going to get for that? Studio, 350, 400? You get 400. Like, local housing authority rates, 400, I'm guessing. Cash buyers only, need a refurbishment, 55 grand. LS12, that's a decent, you know, a decent opportunity. There's loads of stuff on there. Fixed price, cash buyers. Notice some of these are cash buyers. And this is also 50% ownership, so we don't like those. City space again. With old-looking furniture in there. And you have landlords who wonder why they can't rent stuff. Let me just pull this up. So you've got this really small studio flat, and you've got this horrid furniture, this horrid couch. And people wonder why they can't sell stuff. The kitchen, by the way, is in that cupboard there, if you wondered where the kitchen was. It is a kitchen in a cupboard. It's kind of neat, I think, actually, to be honest with you. But look at where the kettle is. Like, just have some shelving. Like, you know, why can you not just... People don't put the money into them. But this is literally how small these units are. But look how bland it is. People wonder why they can't rent these things out. Crazy. Let's have a look at this one. That's all right. It's been refurbed, actually. Oh, it looks all right to me. I would buy that. It's 55 grand. The problem on these, by the way, one of the reasons why you need cash buyers is because you can't get a mortgage this low. Like, literally, it's 55 grand, but it'd be cash buyers only because you can't get a mortgage on it. It's too cheap. Like, 75 grand is usually the lowest amount you'd be able to get to. But you want to practice for numbers. Like, what's a deposit on this? Assume it's... Well, you can't get a deposit on it because it's not mortgageable. You'd have to get a loan for these. Let's put minimum price 75 grand. 70 is close enough. And even still, 70 grand. Like, that should really go out at 75 grand, by the way. Just so that people can get mortgages. And I think maybe the people selling these don't understand it. Or even the estate agents don't understand it. I guess but it's not all buy-to-let and there's first-time buyers buying some of these as well, I guess. This one here looks all right. 75 grand, ground floor. Flat, you're going to get, what, 500 a month on that? Probably 450, 500. Again, that stacks up. Easy peasy. Let's look at something a little bit more complicated. Let's say a three bed and let's have property type houses and not flats. And let's have a look at something a bit more complicated. And also, we don't want buying schemes, retirement homes or new houses. Okay, look at this. A unique four-bed in Beeston. Buy-to-let landlord was looking to add value. 87 grand. It's guide price, so it means it's going to auction again. Let's stay away from auctions. This one here, 115. Like, it's three-bed, by the way. So LHA rate is what you're probably looking at. So you're probably looking at LHA is what, about 650, 700? Not a great yield. I mean, this is where people are struggling right now because house prices have gone up so much. People are actually struggling with getting the rents that they need in order to do it. So often on stuff like this, you have to do something special. Like, I know this one's guide price again, but actually on this one here, Look at this. You've got a front entrance there. And then you've got a rear entrance there. That right there, my friends, is an upstairs flat and a downstairs flat. It costs you 15 to 20 grand to do it. Clear all that out. You could even have a bit of an extension, maybe. I'd keep that carpet. That's a joke. Obviously, it needs a full refurb. But, wow, wonderful yellow suite, bathroom suite there. That's awesome. Boy, that takes me back. That reminds me of my gran's house from when I was 9. It's just an old person who's passed, I would say. Anyway, guide price. That's a wonderful opportunity to convert that into 2 1-bed flats. But like, you need to be able to run the numbers. If you're going to split that up into 2 separate flats, first of all, let's say guide price 115. Let's say you buy it for 130. So 75%, you need 25. You need what, about 35 grand, including stamp duty, plus 20 grand. You're going to need 55 grand down in order to do this, refurb it. But then you're going to have 2 flats that are going to be worth what, 75 each, 150. So you'll be able to pull all your money back out, potentially, okay, once you've done the works. And then now you've got 2 separate flats that you're going to be able to rent out. But this is for you to practice these numbers. And that's exactly where you should be. You've got to practice these numbers. Okay, where are we next? Let's move on to the next one. Let's talk about offers then. So, like, on this property here that we just looked at, not that one, second screen, here we go. On this one here, you could actually go and put an offer in on this house. Now, guide price is 115. You can go to William H. Brown. Like, this is the thing. Put offers in. You can put an offer in before it goes to auction. You can put an offer in of 100 grand. Gets you into the conversation. Now they're going to reject it, okay? And then you go, and actually, I would actually, once you've run your numbers, you've got your builders in, to, you know, you do the viewing, you have a look at the upstairs, you have a look at the downstairs, you run your numbers and work out what numbers actually make this property work for you. It may be that the maximum you can pay for it is 100 grand, okay? But if the maximum that you can pay for this is 125 grand, why would you not put an offer in of 115 and see if they take it? Usually, guide price is within about 10%. Of what the reserve is, if there's a reserve. It depends also when the auction is. It depends, you know, some people just want to get rid of it. That's why we put in an auction. We want a guaranteed sale. So if you put an offer in and this deal stacks up at £125,000, start at 115. Go to 120, 122,500, 123,500, 124, 124,500, 125. That's the latitude of agreement. That's the negotiation technique that we talked about in the learn to negotiate section. They might do that. Now, this is up to you to make sure that this deal actually stacks up at the price that you wanted it to stack up at. And if it doesn't, then you don't put an offer in at that point. But this is what I mean by you've got to practice for numbers and know what the numbers are. And then you start putting in offers. Even stuff that's pre-auction, you can buy this before it even goes to an auction. And you've got to start putting in some cheeky offers. We put offers in on all sorts of stuff. We put ridiculous offers in. My best ever below market value discount was 48%. 48% was my best ever below market value discount. And we got that. We went into the house and the doors were hanging off and there was like crap on the carpet, like dog poo, feces on the carpet that was embedded into the carpet. And then there were head-size holes in the wall. And then the woman had lost a front tooth, and you're like, it wasn't difficult to actually work out what had gone on here. And I'm like, we need to just put an offer in, get this deal done, because someone's going to end up like seriously hurt, like even more seriously hurt. Anyway, we put an offer in of 48 grand. She hated him, he hated her. They wanted to kill each other. We put an offer in. She accepted it more than he wanted. He wanted to go full asking price, and she just wanted to screw him over. We got the deal. We completed in like 10 days, like really, really fast. That was part of a deal that we would complete very quickly. Like, we probably saved someone's life at that point. But we put in cheeky offers. Some people are ready just to move on with their lives, and they don't care what they've left behind. They just need to move on, okay? One of the things that we do when we do that is we actually do due diligence on what other debts have you got, what credit card debt, what loan. They didn't have any other debts, by the way. We had this house worth 150 grand, They just wanted to move on. They had a place to go to, both of them. Didn't have any other debts. And it was a good deal for us, and it was a good deal for them. And that's one of the aspects that I think is really important, is that you've got to make sure that if you're putting in offers, you actually understand the context that you're putting in offers. It depends. If you're putting them in through estate agents, it's fine. You're putting cheeky offers. If you're dealing direct and you're buying properties below market value, I think you've got a moral obligation to make sure that the offers that you're putting in doesn't screw the other person over. I like, on negotiation, I like it to be a win-win type situation. And if it's not a win-win for me, it's like, maybe we don't buy this deal. It's got to be a win-win. They've got to be able to move on afterwards. We don't want to screw people over. And I think that's really important. Now, if you're dealing with an estate agent, however, it's up to the estate agent to put offers in. And estate agents, by the way, are really dreadful at putting offers in. So if you say to them, 175 grand, put it in at 140, they'll put it in at 140. And if you say, if they come back and say it's not enough, and you go, okay, 1,400, 1,500, but, that we've not got a lot of movement on that. They won't actually then take that little piece of extra wording, we've not got a lot of movement. They won't then pass that on. And if you say to them, can you just tell them we've not got a lot of movement, they still won't pass it on, because they're useless, quite frankly. So this is one of the reasons why we tend not to use estate agents, because they can't negotiate like we can negotiate. The estate agent's job, first and foremost, is to sell the house. The second job is to get as much for it. And it's like you're failing the first part of that. Like if we can't get a deal, you've failed the first part. You've not even got to the second part. The second part is about them coming back and going, can you squeeze a bit more? Like, could you get 130, 145 out of it? That's their job, but they never do that. They just come back and go, yeah, accepted. It's crazy. They never ask. When we watch like Selling Sunset on Netflix, I think it is, or Amazon, they come in and they go, can you squeeze a bit more? That's what you're supposed to do. But all the estate agents I've ever dealt with, they go, oh no, they've accepted it. They never ever try and squeeze a bit more out. It just shows how bad they are as negotiators. But look, you've got to put in as many offers as you can. Don't be afraid to put offers in. Go find a deal, phone up the estate agent. What's your dirtiest, smelliest property that you've got? The one that's been on the market the longest, the worst house on the street. Which one is it? This one, 90 grand. Okay, well, put an offer in, 70 grand. We can complete in 10 days. Like, you've got no idea if you can complete in 10 days. Put the offer in anyway. Obviously, then go find out if you can get bridging finance. By the way, to complete in 10 days, you need to buy some insurance for the searches. That's the main key. Once you've got finance in place, bridging finance, my mate Richard Ignatovich can help you on that. But once you've got bridging finance in place, you need indemnity insurance on the searches in case the searches come back. But that's the thing that will help you on that. Anyway, look, rushed through that today. Loads to talk about there. We rushed through it, but it still took 35 minutes. But I hope that's useful for you. We're going to catch up with you on the next video. My name's Dan Latto. Have yourselves a wicked day. Take care. Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.